Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Are you familiar with the game called hockey?
All I have to do is talk for a living.
If you say lube 10 times, you just feel better.
You say lube 10 times, you're going to feel better.
Why shouldn't I always be happy? I'm stealing money.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
I went through life with this last name, okay? I'm a kindly old wizard. Close your eyes, hold your nose, swallow the medicine.
Debate hockey.
Swift Current Broncos. Lethbridge Hurricanes. The Vancouver Giants.
God.
Pop culture.
I don't want to be culturally insensitive. I never am on this show. So we still may have Twinkies here in the States.
Still may have the ho-ho. Good news.
Might have
the
ding-dong.
And more hockey.
Jeff Merrick on the pub. Scooting up and down. Knocking the biscuit around.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Let's start the show proper, shall we?
Coming out of my cage and I've been doing just fine. Gotta get in the do.
Start out with a kiss. How did it end up like this? It was only a twist. It was only a...
Oh, kiss, not twist.
I fall asleep and she's calling a cab.
Brandon Flowers in the classic tradition of American vocalists affecting an accent. Did Billy Joe Armstrong, of course, probably our greatest forebear of that.
When I found out they were from Vegas, I was like, no, but they're originally from, like, no, they're really, they're not, they just think they are.
Yeah. I like the part where, like, I'm like, oh, I can't believe they're from Vegas. I'm like, oh, wait, no, he's wearing a shirt with roses on it, and he's standing in back of a keyboard in front of the stage, so now I'm a little bit more enthusiastic about
this. Taking Contra.
They're another one of those bands, and I'm going to put Coldplay in this group, too. I don't know. You seem like the type that doesn't like Coldplay, I'm gonna
Bullshit.
Guess.
I fucking love the Coldplay. I defended the Coldplay during the Super Bowl. The Facebook.
I feel like Coldplay was quaint when they started, and Clocks was a good song and everything else. They had a very specific vibe, kind of a moody, British vibe. But then they did the same thing the Killers did, which is they swung for the fences. They said, we're going to be an arena rock band for a while. And then they started wearing, like, multicolored Sgt. Pepper's, like, the band member stuff. And the one guy's walking around with a snare drum. It got out of hand.
I like all their stuff. Speed of Sound. What's the one song where the guy used to be a king and then he's
now he's
not
a king. Yeah,
sweep
I believe that's I just
sweep the streets.
I just can't wait to be king. Which Simba sings in The Lion King.
Hold me like a river, Jordan.
That's a different song. Right?
That was the Free Willy song, right, from Michael Jackson?
Oh, wait, that's not from The Lion King?
No, that was Say You'll Be There from that was the Free Willy song that Michael Jackson had.
Oh,
which
right.
Again always made me very uncomfortable that Michael Jackson had a song from Free Willy
about a whale.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, so what? Oh, it's an Elton John song from Lion King. Right?
Can you feel
right.
the love tonight?
I was late. Why is everybody British all of a sudden? That's like every artist, including the Killers, who are sort of British. That's we've just listed like every single British musician of the last 30 years. That's
and then when actresses really want to try to push for an Oscar, they either get a disease or affect a British accent, like Anne Hathaway.
I know Anne Hathaway's not British, right?
No, she's not.
Yeah,
no.
But she was in that movie. What's that really bad movie she's in with Meryl Streep? It's really bad. It's about the fashion industry. It's like the worst movie ever.
Oh, my
ever.
God. I just realized what you were doing. You're such a dick. You know I love The Devil Wears Prada. I was thinking, like, what period piece did she do where she was affecting a British – and then I just realized what you're doing. You're so terrible. You're
but Emily, terrible Emily Blunt's in it, and she's British. That's why it made me think
Hello,
of
hello, hello.
Hello. Hello, Anne Hathaway. Are you going to do Theatre Kid face again? Oh, I'm a theatre kid. Look at me. I'm Emily Blunt. I'm not a theatre kid. I'm just a good actress.
All I know is there is absolutely no way that Adrian Grenier is going to keep on making port wine reductions.
You love the port wine reductions. That's your go-to reference to that movie every time it gets brought up.
It's the struggling short order, line chef whose big plate in life is like I just picture him on the line just making port wine reductions for people's tasty steaks and just like one of these days I'm just to walk away and not make these port wine reductions anymore.
I'm gonna make a cream friche that gets me on the cover of Chef's Monthly or whatever the magazine is, and then Anne Hathaway is going to have to edit that magazine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. You know, it's right. Yeah. I'm going to sous vide this chicken. And...
Anyways, welcome to the podcast. It's me, Greg, with Dave Lozo. kind of getting confused as to how the intro goes.
Yeah, wait. What's my name again?
We're doing a podcast today. It's kind of a busy day for us, but we wanted to fit in one because of all the stuff that's happened in the last 24 hours, and also because I don't think there's an MBSW tomorrow. Specifically, Duncan Keith deciding to, just go off and smack someone in the mouth with a stick.
Just hit the guy in the face. I mean, to be fair, though, Charlie Coyle...
has a face.
And he checked Duncan Keith. And when you check somebody... In a contact sport, legally, it's your right. It's like prima nocture in Braveheart. it's your right to hit the guy in the face with your stick because how dare he check you to the ice like that?
Right.
I love the best part too. But before Keith got ushered off the ice, he was like making the gesture as if like he lost his balance.
Right.
Even though like he hit the ice, gathered himself, and then was like. No one does this to Duncan Keith, and he just cracks him in the face with his stick.
After this and after Sedin a few years ago, like we can now say that he's got a bit of a psychotic streak, right?
Jeff Carter.
And Jeff Carter, too, right? Like, yeah, I mean, like, at this point, it's not speaking out of turn. And I by no means am I saying I'm a clinical psychologist, but he's got a bit of a psychotic streak.
I mean, I am not a lawyer, but I feel like he should go to prison. The same way you're not a psychologist, but you're able to diagnose. I feel like we've got enough
first of all,
TV watching of those types of shows to know this sort of thing.
I think I could diagnose him and it wouldn't be any issue, but I think you'd have a problem sending him to jail because the defense would be he's so exhausted from playing all those minutes in the playoffs, an unprecedented amount of minutes. I mean, Larry Robinson would never play like 30 minutes a night during the 1980s, that he's just so exhausted that he didn't have his wits about him.
Oh, like a fatigue defense.
Right.
Like he was mentally exhausted.
And let's face it, the Dennis Weidman decision doesn't have his wits about him a viable defense now for anything.
Right, where like you can get suspended for 20 games, but miss 19 and then have it be 10. I mean, that's just that's the beauty of the National Hockey League right there, folks.
Duncan Keith did that to Charlie Coyle. It was pretty blatant and pretty terrible. The Department of Player Safety has given Keith an in-person hearing for the high sticking. They've offered it to him at the very least.
And he's going to say, nah, no thanks. And then he's going to get 5 games because there's only 5 games left because, God forbid. That's the thing, too. Like, when he knocked the – first of all, it's not as though he just hit Jeff Carter in the face with his stick and knocked his tooth out. He hit God, I don't want to call Jeff Carter a Greek statue, but he's a beautiful man. And to take out the teeth of something that pretty, it was like Fight Club where, you know, Edward Norton piles off of Jared Leto and he's just like, I wanted to just destroy something beautiful. Mm-hmm. That was Duncan Keith. And also the Sedin thing, he never got anything for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So at this point...
Yeah, it was like an accident or something.
Yeah, like, oh, whoops, my bad. like Joe Hallenbeck in Last Boy Scout. Oh, my bad, Mrs. H.
Friday, not too great, not for football.
But he's only going to get 5 games because if you give him a 6th game, he'd miss game 1 of a playoff series in the NHL.
Well, you don't think so?
Never.
You don't think so?
He'll get exactly 5 games.
6 would also trigger an appeal, too, so they're probably a little bit exhausted from the appeal process.
Right.
So we'll go with 5. You're right.
He'll appeal, and then he'll miss all 6 games, and then on the appeal, it'll get reduced to 2. But then the Blackhawks will be eliminated by that point, and it won't matter.
Blackhawks with a loss to the Minnesota Wild last night, but the National Predators also lose. Same situation in the East. The Flyers and Bruins and Red Wings both lose.
Yeah, it was a weird night last night.
Really weird night. The Bruins-Red Wings one is a dicey one. I think that's a situation where because they play each other, really anything can happen. But yeah, them both losing was really weird. But the reason we wanted to do a podcast today is not because of the weirdness on the ice necessarily, but the weirdness off the ice as the court in Minnesota dropped trowel and dumped a bunch of emails all over the hockey world and the Globe and Mail in what I, as I said on the blog, in what might be the greatest piece of journalism maybe since Watergate, allowed us to search through those emails with a search filter. So I was up until 3 in the morning last night looking up every curse word I could find, looking up every player that's ever been concussed or has concussed somebody, looking up my name to no avail, looking up Yahoo to some avail, looking up John Scott, and there's an email from Colin Campbell talking about how Scott's like a feckless goon from like 2007.
It's amazing. It's amazing stuff.
It is unbelievable, the treasure trove of weirdness. And there's two ways to look at it. The first is to nibble around the edges and point out the incredible nonsense being spewed forth from the keyboard fingers of Colin Campbell and all of the sort of bizarre little media things that came out of this and some of the nonsensical stuff about, fighting and stuff. But then there's the bigger picture thing, which is what does this actually say about the NHL's view of player safety? But that shit's boring, so let's talk about Colin Campbell.
How does he not know at this point in his life the difference between your and your? I don't know what he makes. I'm assuming he's a millionaire at this point in his life, considering how long he's been a higher up at the NHL. But like, shouldn't like somebody? I'm assuming he's on other emails with like non-league, mm-hmm. Bettmans and stuff like that, like other people in like hockey ops. Wouldn't someone just tap him on the shoulder, just be like, hey, just listen, YOUR, YOUR, and he would be like, wow, listen. Kevin, thank you. I really appreciate that because I don't want to look like an idiot in these emails because if otherwise I'd be really smart based on everything I say. Like, the best Colin Campbell thing for me was somehow like a dude got a hold of Bettman and Colin Campbell's and Bill Daly's emails.
It was some random guy who sent in an angry email to puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com.
Right.
Somehow it went to Gary Bettman.
But somehow you got all those people on there and you just like I get emails like that I don't respond to, and yet Colin Campbell was like, fuck this guy, I'm going to tear him a new one. And I'm reading it, and I'm just like, oh, dude, you had so many opportunities to just stop typing and delete this. Why would you have sent this back to this guy?
Yeah.
And reply all. He replied all.
He replied all, and he the guy was like a stockbroker or something or worked at a bank.
So, yeah.
And the first thing he wrote was something along the lines of like, in the hockey world, and I know that you don't know too much about it, sitting in your fancy bank or whatever it was. It's like,
and the thing was, the guy's email, as far as like angry emails go, wasn't really that disrespectful. He opens it up. He's like, look, I'm a fan of this team, so maybe I'm coming from a place that's a little biased. Like, I understand that. But here's what I think about. And then Colin Campbell was just like, bro, I played hockey in the 70s, man.
Oh, my God. There was so much of that, man. From him, from Chris King, from Mike Murphy. Like, every other email was some reference to how it used to be. When we were playing back in the day, no one would even say boo, and their eyes would fall out of their sockets and go on the ice and get squished by skates.
Oh, my God. The guy – who was it? Was it Chris King? I don't want to say the wrong name. But
Chris, are you talking about the concussion vacation
guy,
one?
The guy was like, yeah, players today probably want to take a week or two off. Chris King?
Chris King, who is a VP of hockey operations for the NHL, literally said the complete opposite of what has been said of hockey players in perpetuity. The thing that we say about hockey players as a criticism is that they never are smart enough to get off the ice, to take some time off, to go see a doctor, to heal themselves up properly. Like, they all want to get back on the ice. Like, that's the thing that we criticize them for. Like, Dennis Wiedemann should have gone to the back.
Right.
Dennis Wiedemann's telling his trainer, yeah, even though I went crazy and attacked the referee, I'm all right. I need to get back out there, help the boys. And Chris King literally says the complete opposite, which is that he believes that players milk their concussion syndromes to get 2 weeks of vacation.
Yeah, I didn't think of it like that. That is like the complete opposite of the whole
– everything.
Everything we've ever been – like, I am Gregory Campbell. Wait, so you're saying you take 2 weeks off? Is that?
Yeah.
I thought he played through like a broken leg to milking kill a penalty.
It.
Now all of a sudden they're like Rick Nash was just out 7 weeks.
Yeah.
I guess he was faking his leg injury the whole time.
Yeah, he was going to come back, and then he was like, oh shit, wait, Daredevil's back. I need at least another 3 or 4 days to binge that.
Well, you're telling me Friends is on Netflix now? I can see all 10 seasons in 7 weeks. Easy.
Some of Colin Campbell's greatest hits from this email dump: Ray Shiro, then general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins, writes in about a 2010 incident involving Chris Letang. Can you give me an idea of what you were thinking on the Letang hit?
Right, and like a totally – like it wasn't like the usual GM thing where he's like, this is bullshit. You got to suspend Corey Perry. He's like, hey, so what's up with Letang? And Colin Campbell says,
We're going to get rid of the hit. We're going to get rid of hitting and lay down every time you are hit. Keep your freaking head up. Shoulder to shoulder. Those are my thoughts. And then he writes – not to be repeated with three exclamation points. So he's serious.
Like, when someone says, when they're being recorded, hey, let's not record this. Let's not save this.
This legitimately, as I said last night when I was going through these emails, this is peak Colin Campbell.
Oh, it's so
this is from 2006. It's an incident between the Washington Capitals and the New York Rangers in which Colton Orr hit Ovechkin in the mouth with a stick. And then Brashear, I think, went after Aaron Ward later in the game. Colin Campbell writing to Brian Burke. Brashear is a repeat offender and a bully. He didn't need to do this. Having said that, Ward is a quote-unquote punk and deserved the whack. He didn't get hit that hard, and why he was yapping, I don't know. It's like coaches who yap, parentheses Terry Murray.
I know. Oh, how about when he calls Doug Wilson, Doug Wine Wilson.
And then he goes like this. Could have been worse. This is about Ovechkin. He nailed Ovechkin in the mouth but did not cut him. Could have been worse, and at least Ovechkin got up and didn't roll around like Ward. The tree huggers will kill me and say Orr should have gotten 10. Cherry and his boys will say Brashear should get 10. Can't win. Going to Detroit, they're doing most of their stuff before warm-ups. I don't know what that last part is, but the thing about Colin Campbell in two separate emails – used tree huggers as a pejorative and then said Greenpeace pukes as a pejorative. And I know the NHL is very proud of their NHL Green initiative. And I feel like this must be a huge embarrassment.
Well, what they're doing is conserving the way the game used to be. I'm Dave Lozo, ESPN.
Hockey used to be so lumbering. Listen. The other insane part of this whole thing is the old school thinking, Colin Campbell and Mike Murphy going back and forth talking about how
Mike Murphy's bad in there too.
Way things used to be with balls. And listen, it is just mind numbing. It's mind numbing that these are the stewards of the game. It's mind numbing that these are the people communicating behind the scenes, in some cases setting policy. But the other part of the Campbell emails that probably deserves mention is the fact that he is in seemingly constant contact with Darren Drager and Bob McKenzie at TSN. Now, we both know Bob. Bob's great.
Bob's at the light.
We love Bob. Drager is great, too. We don't know him as well.
I don't like Drager.
All right. Well, I wasn't going to, try to...
I was going to be honest. I don't see. Like, I feel like if I say I like Drager as much as I like McKenzie, it deflates about how much I like McKenzie.
Yeah.
So I want to be clear about how much I love Bob.
The people get it.
Yeah.
I know a lot of you read the McKenzie emails and came away thinking that it was unprofessional. And it's tough to say because I think for any writer, or for any journalist, any reporter, you write emails sometimes to people about a given subject, about whatever. You're trying to crack a joke maybe, may have a little levity in there, and maybe it comes off as being – like when he says, can you give Corey Perry a game? It's clearly like a joke. It's a little whimsical thing.
Right.
But when he says that Dan Carcillo is dangerous and doesn't have all of his facilities upstairs – it's much more than that, and it kind of comes off as a bit more advisory than I think you'd recognize a reporter being.
Yeah, but we talk amongst ourselves, amongst other reporters. I've said tons of negative things about players. Like it's not like I don't see that and be like, wow, I would never say that about Dan Carcillo. I've probably said the same thing about Dan Carcillo.
I guess it's like putting it in an email. Like something that could be documented and stuff. Like, I mean, like, listen, I used to have – Brendan Shanahan and I used to meet maybe once every couple of months to just go over player safety stuff. And he very early on saw how we were writing about player safety, myself and Nick and Katsunika, and said these guys get what we're trying to do. And so it would be an informational session, usually over like coffee or whatever. But it would also be him kind of picking my brain on stuff. And I say that in the context of the McKenzie thing. There are times when it seems like McKenzie is doing more than simply reporting. He is putting his two cents in and saying, here's what should be done. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that, like, don't hold it against Bob. Like, that's what happens sometimes when you work closely with a subject, when you're on a beat, is sometimes people are like, what do you think? And you kind of offer up what you think. Because why would you be a dick about it?
But during the 2014 playoffs, I want to say, it was when Montreal was down 3-0 to the Rangers, and Brandon Prust woke up that morning and said, I'm going to break Derek Stepan's jaw.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that wasn't intentional and planned from the moment he got on the ice that night. And I think he only got a game for it, I want to say. He didn't get a lot. Whatever it was, he didn't get a lot for it. And I must have written the most scathing player safety thing of all time. And then the Rangers won. They played the Kings. I'm out in L.A. for the Cup Final, and someone from player safety was very, very upset with me. And we had a conversation about it, and I was just like, I think Brandon Prust – did this intentionally. I think you guys screwed up. And, you know, you have these conversations. So to me, it's not – it's just It's just part of the deal.
It's interesting to see how open-minded they are, actually. You know, like, you read those emails. For sure. You read those emails. Player safety has always been very open-minded about what people are thinking of the job that they're doing, and is there anything else that they should be doing? Is there anything else they focus on? What did you think of the length of suspension, that kind of thing? They've always been very, very open-minded about it. But, like, I was generally surprised by Bettman. And I know that in some cases in those emails, Bettman's asking questions because he knows he'll get asked about it and doesn't want to be caught with his pants down. About, like, the OHL fighting suspension policy and shit like that. But in the bigger picture sense about these emails, I found it to be a league that from around 2007, which is where a lot of these, you know, start, to through the Shanahan years, it felt like a league that was trying to figure out what it needs to do.
I feel like it started to become that when Shanny was there. Like, I read Shanny's emails. He's like the dude that pops into the room and is like, no, they're not faking. They really have concussions. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
But before that, like, it's just like, oh, man, Jonathan Chichu's fake. Like, first of all, it was great to see Jonathan Chichu's name in something again.
Yeah, Chichu Train.
Brought back memories for me.
Train, Chichu Train. Those are the greatest videos of all time.
Actually, we should make a Thomas the Tank Engine thing for, like, teams tanking.
Mm-hmm.
But, like Shanny, who, you know, he fought. He was a tough dude. Like, he played millions and billions of games. And he was just like, guys, you know, not for nothing, but, you know, maybe we should have a conversation about. And then, like, Colin Campbell kicks down the door, and he's like, you moron, that's not. Like, before that, though, it just seemed like, I always thought that, too. I remember when, like, Coley was in charge of, like, player safety, or charge of suspensions, and it was like, there was, like, the wheel of justice.
Yeah, it was.
And, like, you read the emails, and you're like, yeah, that really was what it was. Like, he was like, there was no rhyme or reason for how they did things. They thought guys were faking. They thought dudes that didn't get up right, like Chris Letang. Chris Letang, like, I genuinely, like, there's certain guys in the NHL who I would, like, fear for their, like, life after hockey. Remember, like, Ryan Clough was a guy like that. Actually, I've seen Ryan Clough a bunch around Hoboken. He's doing great.
That's good.
He's great. But Chris Letang is one of those guys, too, where I'm like the next hit may leave him, like, in a dark room for 2 years.
That Pat LaFontaine category. Of, like, you're just hoping that he gets out of this thing okay.
And, like, you think, like, people in the NHL who actually have a vested financial interest in the health of these players being – having them on the ice and not, you know, people filing lawsuits after their career's over would take greater care. And they're just like, oh, man, tell them to get up. And it's like, really?
Yeah, I know.
Really?
The thing – that's true. And I think what Shanahan was able to do – was he was able to identify the problem. The pivot from Campbell to Shanahan was, Campbell would be like, what's wrong with these guys getting hit? You know, back in my day, we would just get up and not complain about it. And Shanahan's like, well, you know what?
Yeah.
You might have a point, except what if, and this is just me talking here, Coley, what if they didn't get hit?
Yeah.
Like, what if we just made it so they didn't get hit anymore? And then we could eliminate all that gray area because we wouldn't be hit then.
And you know Coley reads that email and is off in Toronto and just starts calling Brendan Shanahan every name in the book to whoever's in the room.
Yeah, exactly. But what I was trying to say before, though, is, like, if you go back to 2007, they were talking about Rule 48. Like, they were talking about – like, Bettman presented what was the framework for Rule 48 3 years before it was enacted. And reading that stuff in that email dump, you're reminded of why things – don't get done. Like, even if the NHL, in the time in which these guys that are suing the league was trying to be proactive about player safety, here's how you have to get through it. You have to have the board of governors sign off on it, the GM sign off on it, the board of governors sign off on it, and you need the NHLPA to sign off on it. And that's the one thing from those emails that's kind of a through line through a lot of this stuff is Bettman presented Rule 48 in 2007. One general manager supported it. The NHL tried to get rid of stage fighting years before they actually did with the last 5 minutes rule. NHLPA blocked it. And Shanahan talks about that. He talks about how the PA in years past had been vigilant in trying to protect fighting because otherwise those guys aren't in the league.
Exactly.
And it always bugs me when the NHL, and particularly Bettman, gets all this flack from people about certain things that do or don't get done in this league, and there's no recognition of the chain of command. There's no recognition of how many minds you have to convince and how many votes you need and how you need the union to sign off on shit in order to get it done. And I think these emails really do spell out exactly how hard that process is.
Yeah. He's still not good at his job. That's a really compelling argument. You use a lot of smart facts.
Thank you.
But no, I'm sorry. He just, I feel like if Gary Bettman really wanted to get something done, like if he was, I'm not saying like he can just, you know, pound his fist.
It's easier now that he's named half the owners and over half the owners in the league during his tenure there.
Yeah, but like, I mean, if you say you run the league and you're like, boy, this situation could actually wind up bankrupting us if, you know, we're not careful. Like, I feel like if you had a commissioner that presented this to the owners and said, we have to get rid of this, they would say, all right, fine. Not all right, fine, but I mean, like, the problem is just the owners have so much power. Like Harry Sinden and
Bill Wirtz.
The freaking Flyers.
Ed Snyder.
Ed Snyder.
Yeah.
Like, run shit.
Although you're talking about back in the day.
Like, like at any point.
Oh, you mean
like
Jeremy Jacobs.
Guys. Jeremy Jacobs. And Harry Sinden. Like, I feel like at the same token, like, Gary Bettman could actually have, like, a 69 slide PowerPoint.
Right.
It has all these compelling arguments that are health, financial, and, like, those guys would be like, sorry, bro. Ain't doing it.
Jeremy Jacobs really does run things because he's the guy who determines how big your soda is at concessions with his side company. It's really impressive.
Got to get that kind of power.
How many fries somewhere. You get on your in your combo meal with your hot dog.
It's like, how much do I got to pay Cam Neely?
Yeah.
two fewer fries.
Let me see. How many chicken fingers can I fit into this cardboard bowl with fries?
Oh, I want some chicken fingers.
Mm-hmm.
By the way,
best fast food fries, by the way. Go ahead.
Best fast food fries.
Mm-hmm. Getting into a little Doughboys territory here now. I'd still go McDonald's, by the way.
Yeah.
Wendy's are pretty good.
I liked Wendy's before they changed them and they have like the skin on them now.
Yeah, two Jersey boys would definitely say Roy Rogers. They're a little hot curly fry action.
No, disagree. Curly fries. Yeah. Roy Rogers regular fries, not a fan.
Roy Rogers regular anything. Did you go to Roy's a lot when you were a kid? Because I used to go and I used to love loading up my burger with pickles.
Used to go to the one in Livingston Mall.
Oh, wow.
It was right by the Time Out Arcade where I would go and play video games while my parents, you know, bought clothes or whatever. They made me go to the mall. I'd go to Roy Rogers, get a you know, a leg and a thigh.
Yeah.
Get some fries.
And yeah. Whoa, chicken?
Oh, yeah.
I would know. I would get, like, burgers and stuff and just use the Fixin's bar. The only place in the world that has a Fixin's bar now outside of Roy's, if there are Roy's still around, is Fuddruckers. Like, Fuddruckers trusts you enough to put shit on your burger. Yeah. No one else does.
At Rutgers, there was one, like, right at the Route 1.
That was
Route
the Fuddruckers. 18.
Fuddruckers. Yes.
Thank you. Fuddruckers Scarlet Bites.
Oh, my God. Listen, for those of you listening, and there's a reason why this podcast is going to drop later today, we have been mainlining alcohol for hours. We are hammered, bro. But no, they had that cheese, the cheese sauce dispenser.
Yes.
You could just all the cheese. You can make a cheese soup thing out of your French fries and just drink it. It was so good.
The one amazing thing that Roy's had that we're probably alienating all the audience because I don't think they have them in Canada or they ever had it in California.
Whatever. I'm sick and tired of seeing goddamn Sonic commercials all the time on TV, and I can't have that. So you take this back, West Coast.
Oh yeah, that's the one plight of being a hockey writer and having like to watch all the games from all over the country, all over the continent.
Yeah.
Is that like you'll see something delicious and you're like, oh, that looks amazing. Oh my God, look at that pizza. It looks amazing. Right. And it's like, only at Boston Pizza. Yeah. You're like, oh, Boston Pizza. Wait a second. That's the Canada pizza place.
Evander Holyfield's inhaling two cheeseburgers, and you're like, sweet.
Yeah.
Only at Carl's. Like, fuck
Carl. Right. I know. And it's like oh, it's a hot dog and a taco deep fried and then put on a burger bun. And it's like, that looks amazing. At your local Jack in the Box. You're like, fuck you. Just like, come on.
It's actually hard. I live in Hoboken, and all they have in terms of fast food is McDonald's, which is fine. I don't mind that.
It's whatever.
But like, I see the Quesalupa commercial, and I'm like, I want a Quesalupa.
Overrated.
And even in You're Manhattan. Not missing anything. Honestly, after they did the Quesalupa commercial, I was like, all right, when I go to do the podcast on Wednesday, let me go find the closest Taco Bell to the studio. And there's, like, nothing around here.
First of all, never eat Taco Bell in the city. I cannot endorse that.
Why? Because I might get diarrhea? As if, like, I'm not going to – I could eat Taco Bell in Wisconsin.
As I said, Quesalupa, size of a small purse, completely overrated, not at all what you think it is. And frankly, the it's double-decker gordita. The one with the gordita wrapped around the taco with the cheese sauce in it is so much better.
Called.
I forget. Crunchwrap Supreme.
Crunchwrap Supreme.
Wait, no, that's the Flying Saucer one. You guys know what I'm talking about. Cheesy Gordita Crunch. Cheesy Gordita Crunch, amazingly better than the Quesalupa. So don't even bother with Quesalupa.
I want
No, Roy's would have horseradish sauce, which I always thought was a very novel like, no other fast food place had horseradish sauce.
On their burgers?
No. Like, in the condiments. And what my dad would do was he could take a little plastic tub of horseradish and then drop some ketchup in there, and you create this sort of, like, almost like a little cocktail sauce, but without weird crunchy bits.
I do that with ketchup and buffalo sauce or hot sauce.
Ketchup cuts a good sauce.
Yeah. Ketchup and buffalo sauce. Mm-hmm. Like, if you ever go to a Yankee game, they have garlic fries. They're fantastic.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
You dip them in the ketchup mixed with buffalo sauce. It's the best $19 fries you're ever going
to
have.
Yankee Stadium's got good food.
Yankee Stadium. I like Citi Field, too. It's amazing. We're old enough now to, like, remember back when I was a young man and I went to the original Yankee Stadium, the food was not as good as it is today. Same thing with Shea.
Shea was terrible. Shea was like... It was like, first of all, it was all RC Cola, let's be honest.
Was it?
Yeah, it's Shea.
I barely remember.
Yeah, and it was all very – it was like arena food at a stadium. And now, like, every stadium in the country is up the food game to the point where, like, when I remember going to National Stadium when it opened in D.C. and being – and just marveling at the fact, like, you walk in and it's like – They had a Ben's Chili Bowl inside the stadium. And Ben's Chili Bowl is like a D.C. Establishment of some renown. Where it's just amazing chili, red hot hot dogs and chili.
Sounds good.
And it's amazing. And, like, that's what happened to all these places. It became a thing where it was like, like Epcot, where it's like we're DC City. And then you come inside, like, oh, all the places love in DC are in one place, in one giant amusement park.
I remember the first time I went to Yankee Stadium, it was my, like, 11-year-old Little League year, so our Little League team went there. And it was, like, scary. You were going to the Bronx as an 11-year-old,
right?
Really
scary.
And we sat in the upper deck. It was an Indians game. Whatever the game was, somebody was down by, like, 8 runs. But we left. They came back and won. But as we were leaving, we're all a bunch of kids. So They were like, hey, everyone, if you have to go to the bathroom, go now.
Yeah.
So, like, you and your buddy would go to the bathroom. But there was, like, this was back when nobody went to Yankees games. So
right.
We're in the upper deck of an 8-run game. There's nobody there.
Yeah.
So we go in the bathroom. And I'll never forget this. I used the stall because I was a shy child. I didn't want to, you know, take out my tiny wiener in front of other people. I come out. I swear to God, I still think about this whenever I go to Yankee Stadium. My buddy was done with his business. I come out, and it's just me and one other guy in the bathroom. He's at the urinal peeing with his pants around his ankles.
Whoa.
Drunk as could be.
Oh, wow.
Well, I mean, no matter what the reason is,
but
it's
still,
not good.
Yeah, bare ass is not what you expect to see, unless it's like a
failed
3-year-old.
Yeah, just bailed. Just an absolutely hammered dude sitting in the upper deck of an 8-run Indians game. And I was like, baseball, that's a great game.
Mm-hmm.
I got to get back here again at some point.
Chances that guy drives a van with the windows blacked out pretty high.
Oh, you think he was maybe like trying to like
I don't know.
Pick me up?
Could be.
Oh,
I bet you were a pretty good-looking kid.
Yeah, I was cute back when I had all that nice blonde hair when I was 11, you know?
Yeah, that's woof.
Yeah. So, like, I don't remember food. I remember the bare-ass drunk man in a urinal.
I don't even know where to go. I don't even know how we – this is one where legitimately I don't know how we got onto it.
Well, speaking of things that are cheeky.
Oh, no. The one thing – speaking of little wieners, the thing that I want to try at MSG – is that – do you see that thing when we walk in, the all the little cocktail hot dogs on a giant spike?
Where?
It's by the press box. It's at one of the food stands. It's like a dozen cocktail weenies on like a wooden skewer, and you just buy it.
Okay. So you go in the 8th Avenue entrance. You go up to the 10th floor, 9th floor,
like
whatever
it is. Where we sit for the games. You go through the security area there, you know?
Yeah.
And then you – it's right. It's like one of the pizza places that's right by there near the bridge.
Uh-huh.
It looks like if you put like 5 of them together, you could have like a washboard, you know. But like that's the little spikes with a bunch of cocktail weenies on it. It's amazing.
I've never noticed that before.
It's crazy.
I noticed like I always. So well, the thing is, when I come in, I don't go up on the bridge yet. I walk around the 9th floor, then go up to the 10th floor. I pass like hot dogs and regular size wieners.
No, these are little tiny baby wieners on a wooden spike. I keep calling it wooden spike, like it's just a skewer.
I hope that
wooden spike sounds like better. Like you'd use it to build a railroad and make sure Magneto couldn't mess with you.
Wait, because like I'm picturing like wieners on a spike. That's like something out of like Game of Thrones, where they would like send a message to the Targaryens, like hey, Theon Greyjoy.
That's right.
Well, you don't get that Theon.
No,
Greyjoy
but
reference.
I know what you're talking about. Like
it's
like putting a head on a a pike to warn the invading armies that you mean business.
I just hope that everyone listening to this chain of events on the show sees those and associates that with my childhood demeanor that we use as a segue.
Not only that, but a dozen of them. Yeah, a dozen of Lozo's pubescent wieners.
Right, so if you see those at MSG, tweet them at me and then say hi to my tiny spiked wiener.
Speaking of tiny spiked wieners, Brett Hull. One of my favorite things about the email dump was this email. Did you see this email, the NBC one?
I don't remember that one.
All right, so it's the perfect storm of everything for me. Brett Hull. Do you remember when Brett Hull was on NBC as the proto-Jeremy Roenick? So Brett Hull did like one season on NBC, not on NBCSN. This was back in the Versus or the OLN days, actually, on cable. Right. But he was on NBC Prime, and he would do the games on the weekends, and they brought him on to be like their Barkley. They're take no prisoners, ball
oh,
steal.
I know where you're going. I saw that email. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so they brought him on as their Barkley. Yeah. And here's the amazing thing about Brett Hull. He really didn't know much about what was going on in the league at that point and really kind of just talked out of his ass and didn't have – what's the word? Preparation for his job. So he would get up there and just say whatever and say it in a really boring way, too. It was such a disappointment because you think of Brett Hull, you think of like maybe like a bit more pizzazz, but he was just not into it. He was, of course, the ambassador of fun in Dallas.
Also the same guy that told everybody on the Blues to stop high-fiving on the bench after goals.
That's right.
Or doing flybys after goals.
That's right.
That's what you want on TV.
So
that sort of enthusiasm.
He apparently went on the air and said that the NHL was trying to get rid of fighting. And mentioned Gary Bettman and Colin Campbell wanted to get rid of fighting. And this email, if you could read it. We had it on Puck Daddy this morning on that, like, 12 things we learned about the NHL through these leaked emails. The email is amazing because it's Gary Bettman writing to Sam Flood, who's the head of NBC Sports and the head of their hockey coverage, writing to him and basically saying, look, we're not trying to get rid of fighting. He's talking out of his ass. This is unacceptable, blah, 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 blah. And Sam Flood basically saying in the email that, yeah, he probably should have talked to you guys first before he said it, and I'll make sure that happens going forward. And I just – it's not to say that there isn't any independent thought on NBC or whatever, but it was that glimpse into rights holder world that I think happens way more often than you'd even know. Like I remember way back in the day I talked to NBC about a gig. And one of the things was, like, you write about Bettman, they got to see it first. The NHL's got to get a glimpse of what you write if it's going to be critical of Bettman.
Yeah.
And, like, that's so it's just so – like, we've talked about it before in the show, like, the candor necessary to make good television. And the idea that you know, Adam Silver isn't tapping Kenny the Jet Smith on his shoulder and saying, you better not say that on your massively popular TNT intermission show.
That fans watch.
And you know they lean on everybody. Colin Campbell's, Hatchett Manning, all those guys in Canada that speak out of turn. And it's one of the reasons why whoever's got the conch shell as far as rights, whether it's Sportsnet and NBC or whomever, is always the one that all of a sudden the tone and tenor of the coverage changes. And what's happened at TSN since they lost the rights? Oh, Rick Westhead is basically camped outside of Bettman's house,
right?
Going through the trash to find out anything that says concussion on it. Like that's what happens when you don't have the rights
anymore. Right. Like that's like honestly, like if let's say like I'm not a Yahoo employee, I'm not a Sportsnet employee, but like let's say Yahoo had exclusive NHL rights.
Yeah.
This would probably be a slightly different show. It would, because think about it. Like think about all the dudes who are like the big time newsbreakers.
Mm-hmm.
Pierre LeBrun, Elliot Friedman, Scotty does his thing.
The big five are Elliot, Pierre, Dreger, McKenzie, and who am I missing?
Bruneau
might be in the big five.
Yeah.
Dreger, McKenzie, LeBron. Dreger, McKenzie, Pierre, Elliot, and I guess.
Yeah. I mean,
Kiprios? Nah.
But like the thing is all those guys don't take the league to task on things because.
Right.
They work for rights holders,
mm-hmm.
and they don't want to burn any bridges. So that was why when the John Scott thing was going on and Bob McKenzie was like, yeah, this trade pretty much was done to screw over John Scott.
Yeah.
You were like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Like, wow, Bob came out and said that? So that's how you know it's true, and B, you know how fucked up it was because he was just like, I'm not going to sit on this, and he put it out there. Like, those guys don't do that. partly because it's like wherever they work, that's probably what they would do because mm-hmm. their job is to trade information, while our job is to sit here and talk about my wiener when I was 11 years old. It's different strokes for different folks.
Oh my God!
But yeah, but that's what happens. Like that's why when you watch,
like what
Mike Milbury.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, hey, the intermission comes and there was like 4 bad calls and it's 2-0. Instead of just like shredding the referees because you don't want to get an email from Terry Gregson, you talk about how Sidney Crosby sucks. Like yeah. that's what you do.
Yeah.
And it's terrible fucking television. And until the league is just like, you guys do whatever you want, man. It's our product. We're going to be fine. You guys can say whatever you want. Just don't lie and yeah. we'll be good. But that just doesn't happen in the NHL.
The refereeing thing was interesting, too. There was an email in there. First of all, they all none of them had any respect for Terry Gregson. Like, Terry Gregson, when he was nice that director dude. Of officiating, nice dude, but boy, oh, boy. Like, they couldn't get him out of there quick enough.
I know.
He sent an email to Mike Pereira of the National Football League that was all like, hey, what are you guys doing on headshots and stuff? I know why I did it. I mean, it's like you want to see what your peers are doing. You want to see, hey, you're a contact sport. Right. What's the language? But it was just so like you came across that. You're like, oh, yeah, the league that got sued basically successfully by all their alumni is the one you're leaning on for your, you know, headshot policy.
And Mike Pereira was like, hey, how you doing, Terry? I'll be happy to help you out right after I finish drinking Tito's. Tito's, my favorite alcoholic drink.
Oh, man.
For those of you that don't get that joke, go to Mike Pereira's Twitter and search Tito's, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
It's pretty great. But, yeah, players that use concussions for vacation time, I think, was my favorite email on that.
11 players use concussions for vacation time. But, like, here's the thing I don't know is, like, do these emails destroy the NHL's shot of winning the lawsuit? Like I don't know what they mean in terms of us being able to make jokes.
That's the big picture.
Like besides that, I don't know what else it means.
That's the big picture thing that I'm talking about. Like I know that everybody really had fun going through the emails and seeing how just Neanderthalic a guy like Colin Campbell is. But at the end of the day, it's like all the stuff they talk about behind the scenes isn't necessarily what has been enacted in policy. In policy, you have a Department of Player Safety. You have Rule 48. You have concussion protocols. You have all these other things that they've done during the span of when these emails are culled from that speak to a progressive move against headshots and concussions, maybe not necessarily a concussion safety protocol because that thing fell apart.
Right.
And then the other thing, too, that you find out in these emails is – much like the NFL, that in that New York Times article that came out recently, they're at the mercy of their teams. Like there are a number of instances in these emails where they're like, blah 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 blah, but you know, New Jersey hasn't given us the numbers in their concussions, or whatever. And it's like,
oh, that was another email too where they were like, yeah, the numbers are higher because now guys go to the quiet room with what may be a concussion. Like
right. And the interesting thing too, like there was a giant presentation about concussions. Right around the time when Savard was out and Sid was out and Perron was out, and they had a thing on fighting, and one of the things they said about fighting was it's really impossible for us to gauge how many concussions are suffered in a fight because the guys who fight are the guys that want to leave the lineup, are the guys that if they're diagnosed with a concussion will be out of action for 5 games and then get replaced.
Right.
So those are the guys that they're talking about when it says like no one wants to report injuries because you might lose your job. And the concussion stats on fighting was like 2% of concussions came from fighting because nobody who suffered one would say anything about it.
Exactly. And like the only way I can imagine this would be like the smoking gun would be, hey, like it would have to be like so overt. It would have to be like, hey, let's set up the concussion protocol. We'll get spotters, and then like Gary Bettman writes back, LOL, wink, wink. Like we're ever going to really use this. Like that's what you need to have happen.
Right.
I think.
Right.
Otherwise, like this is just dudes talking in general, relaxed terms, in stupid ways. But
yeah.
I don't know if they're stupid, but are they like reckless? What's the? Yeah, I don't know.
Like, or if there's like a giant 3,000-page document titled "Hockey Stuff Causes CTE" that Gary Bevan was given in like 1994,
yeah.
and then he tossed it into a fireplace. Like you know, that'd be a smoking gun.
like, let's say like a guy fought, got punched, got knocked out cold, hit his head on the ice and died. Like, could you charge anyone in these emails with, like, depraved indifference?
Mm-hmm.
Like, no. I mean, I think no. I mean, I do watch a lot of Law and Order, so I do feel like I should have the answer to this. So that's my apologies to the listeners. I should have this information, but I don't think anything in there. I mean, again, you've read more than I did. I started reading this at like 1 o'clock last night, and by like 1:30, I was the same thing as you. I searched stuff, and I was like, oh, Colin Campbell can't spell your, and I failed.
Mariska Hargitay interrogating Colin Campbell would be one thing that I want to see. But the thing I would really want to see would be from Criminal Intent, Vincent D'Onofrio against Gary Bettman, like half-hour interrogation scene.
Just like bending over
him. Yeah, bending over him. And that's when you knew it! Isn't it?
Just like sliding pictures of like concussed guys.
No one likes Criminal Intent. Like it wasn't.
Whoa.
No, listen.
Whoa.
In comparison to SVU, which everybody loves. And Law and Order Prime, most of it everybody loves, I mean, especially in like the Jerry Orbach years. Criminal Intent was never in that pantheon of those two shows, I don't think. And I used to tune in for the last 25 minutes because that's when the Vincent D'Onofrio crazy time was going to happen.
When like that was the one part of Criminal Intent that sucked. Like I really liked D'Onofrio. I really liked when Chris Noth came in. Mm-hmm. I liked everybody. I liked everyone on that show. The one thing that was always dumb was. Like, I remember there was an episode where they had, like, a guy took care of, like, inner-city youths by, like, helping them work in, like, a music studio. But really, it was, like, a racket where they stole bikes and murdered. It was weird.
Whoa!
But, like, the way they trapped the guy was in his music studio. They set up, like, a recording. But it was, like, a fake recording. They faked him out. They made him think they recorded him. And, like, the way every episode ends, he confessed everything.
Right. Yeah.
And then, like, that was also the best part, too. It was, like, they would confess in front of D'Onofrio and Catherine Irby. And then once they confessed, like, 12 cops would come in through a door. Like, they were just, like, standing outside, like, listening at the edge of the door, like, all right, has he confessed yet?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go in there and handcuff him.
You're exactly right. Like, most court shows and most cop shows – during a criminal case or an investigation, rely heavily on the emotional outburst from the guilty party. That was every episode of Criminal Intent.
Every episode. Like I want to have like someone who's like a real law person, like a professor, watch every single episode of Criminal Intent and tell me what percentage of the people who committed the crime for sure would have been convicted if not for the fact they just spilled the beans for no reason.
D'Onofrio would get right in somebody's face and be like, and you loved that doll, but since you couldn't have the doll anymore, you decided to make her your doll. I did! I loved my doll and she was going to be my doll, but then she couldn't be, so I murdered her!
You ever see the Stephen Colbert episode?
No!
There's an episode where Colbert
Is he the murderer?
He's the murderer.
Oh, my God.
He's a forger. And, like, he forges, like, old-timey documents and sells them. And somehow, like, D'Onofrio uses Colbert's mother berating him as a child to get him to confess. It's unbelievable.
And he's like, but you hated the president. And that's why you tried to pretend he was in the Texas Air National
Guard. Like, Nation, I did it. I killed him. Dun, 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 and the credits roll.
I do get excited when I see people that are, like, famous, have gone on to bigger and better things on those shows. And it's funny because, like, if you see somebody... Somebody who's like recently become famous, like somebody who's on like a hour long drama or like a supporting bit character in a popular movie or something. You'll see that they were on Law and Order. And it's usually like five different roles.
Yeah,
it'll start off like Girl at Deli, and then it's like Cassandra. Then it's like Murder Victim 2. Then it's then it's like Detective Nancy Malone for like two episodes.
I forget their names on the show, but on SVU. One of the ADAs, one of the two women who were the big ADAs that you knew, she played in an original episode. She played somebody who like hired a stripper and then murdered him, and then like 2 years later, she was like putting people away.
You're like, how did she get that job?
Yeah. And then there's on regular Law and Order. I forget her name. I shouldn't know these names, but like she played like a stripper who I don't think did any murdering, but like she went from stripper to like ADA, which you can do for sure. Mm-hmm. Put yourself through law school and become a lawyer, but I don't think she murdered anybody. But there was definitely a woman on SVU. God, what was her name? Not Alexandra Cabot, the other one. She was on an episode of 30 Rock too, and she's been on NCIS. I watch way too much USA when I'm home. She's been in a lot of stuff. Like she's you would know who she was on SVU, but she definitely murdered somebody and tried to, I think, frame it as a suicide. So
frame it as a suicide?
Yeah, I believe, or like an accident. It was like a bondage scene.
That's the difference, though, between being a Law and Order fan and being a sci-fi geek. because Peter Capaldi, who's now the current Doctor Who, was in a episode called The Fires of Pompeii on Doctor Who many, many moons ago before he was hired to actually be Doctor Who. And the entire fan base of the show is like, well, when are they going to explain the fact that he's already appeared as a bit character in another episode and now he's a Doctor? Meanwhile, like on SVU, it's like every single person that's appeared on the show has been it's like a repertory a theater group. Everybody plays a different role each week.
Jim Gaffigan, I believe, has committed murder and I believe rape on SVU, and I'm pretty sure he's actually committed a crime on the triumvirate of SVU, Criminal Intent, and Regular Law and Order.
Another victim of the Hot Pockets murders.
Hot murders. Oh no, he actually. Oh, that's the Criminal Intent. I think he works at a crematorium.
No,
I think so. No. And I think he, like, instead of burning the bodies, he like hides them out in his backyard and he gets caught. Wait, hold on, I'm gonna find your name.
SVU or Law and Order Prime at its the height of his powers. Which one was your choice?
Oh, like when like Jack McCoy was dominating Gary Rohrbach.
Yeah.
I think I go with that. I would go that. I would go Criminal Intent, and then I like SVU, but like SVU is just so draining.
But that's the thing, though. It has much better cases than the other two.
It's too much.
Much better cases.
Like, but that's how Law and Order fell off. Was it got to the point where they stopped putting away like murderers? Mm-hmm. And it was like, we're gonna put the drug industry on trial, and it's like, no, you're not. Right. This is gonna end badly.
Right. Ice-T takes out his gun at the drug industry. Like, I got you, drug industry. You're under arrest, drug industry.
Show heard no word. Judith Light. Yeah, Judith Light was Sodom.
That's right.
So Stephanie March was Alexandra Cabot.
That's right. B.D. Wong was not Alexandra Cabot, but probably could have played the role.
Oh, see, she's not on the show anymore, so they bury her on IMDb.
If you could see this, Loza is looking through IMDb on Law & Order, which means that he's probably using all of his data as the cast.
Unlimited data,
of this
buddy.
Show. Oh, really? What shoe was you use for your...
I've had the same Sprint plan since like 2002.
Oh, my God. That would be amazing.
Although it's not working.
I certainly don't use... I don't have unlimited data. All right, I think that's probably it. I think we're probably going to end the show now.
It's a cliffhanger. You have to figure out who the ADA
who
is
the ADA
I'm
is.
Talking about.
But anyways... there you go. Emails, look them up. They're fantastic. Duncan Keith, 5 games, going to happen. In the playoffs, out of the playoffs, your prediction, because we'll probably know by the next time we do another show, Detroit, Boston, who gets in, who gets out. I say Detroit will sneak in.
I say Boston's in for sure. They played so well against the Devils yesterday and just got lucky. I mean, the Devils got lucky. I think Detroit's still going to get in over Philly.
And will we see?
They're tied.
Even with fighting Ray Emery on the roster now.
I mean, that's a cry for help when you have no backup goaltender and you're going back to a guy who had an 885 in the AHL.
Yeah, exactly.
And in the West, that's pretty much set, right?
Yeah. I mean, bringing back Ray Emery is akin to WWE bringing Sting in for WrestleMania. I mean, it's like name recognition, but not exactly a lot of mobility.
I don't get that reference. I'm an adult.
Okay, that's fine. So I won't ask you who your WrestleMania picks are. All right. Well, there's the show. This is the awkward part. We can't really tell you what the news is that you'll hear next week about this show.
Yeah, or even when you may hear the news.
Right. Me and Merrick's version of MVSW, the one that is more frequent than this one and has been on longer, that show is fine. In fact, that show is even getting better. But our show, the one me and Lozo do, is going to change a little bit.
A little bit.
I mean, it's the same show, but maybe not where you'd find it.
Casey Novak.
Casey Novak.
It's the first one that comes up, too.
Played by?
Don't do this to me.
So you'll be able to – the news about the show coming up next week, and it's really exciting news, and we can't wait to share it with you. It's almost as exciting as finding who played Casey Novak.
Diane Neal. I knew that.
Who?
Diane Neal.
Come on, open your phone, click her name. Diane Neal.
She's in the 30 Rock episode where they go back to the high school reunion.
No, I didn't want to see that. I wanted you to click on her
bio.
Here we go. Diane Neal. Diane Neal was born November 17th, 1975. I'm 2 years younger. She was a reoccurring guest star on NCIS New Orleans.
Oh, she was on that. Oh, I didn't realize.
As far as her filmography goes, you may best know her. Oh, Jesus Christ.
She's a TV star. She's not a movie star. TV
star. Oh, man, no. She was the voice of Cleopatra in Asterix and Oblix, Mission Cleopatra.
Look, we're talking about the Law and Order world here.
She was on Tom Cavanaugh's Ed.
Ed! What a great show Ed is.
All right.
NCIS, Gifted Man.
God.
She was on Suits.
Testing the yeah.
Did you know that on the on the show Suits, as like a little wink to the show's title, everyone on the show wears a suit?
That's right.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Fucking seven seasons of that show, and I couldn't get more than three.
That's right. Also, as a nod to the title of the show, everybody on Royal Palms has hands.
Royal Pains?
Wait, shit.
Royal Palms is like, I think, the porno version of that
show. Of Royal Pains, right, yeah. Where the kid from Road Trip, you know, he comes in. What's going on in here? Oh, I'm just fixing somebody here in the Hamptons, even though I don't have a practice.
I can't believe those shows on USA last as long as they do.
Characters welcome.
Chris Lee Knows Best.
That show is atrocious, though.
They all are. Mr. Robot's good. Oh, by the way, and Mr.
Yeah,
Robot.
No. I was going to say it was good.
Episode 8. B.D. Wong kills Mrs. Robot.
Oh, and real quickly, because this will be up soon, as opposed to other things that we've done that won't be up soon.
Actually, this will be up exactly when you hear it.
Yeah, right, exactly. What your thoughts on last night's O.J. show?
Great.
It was
good.
A Mark Furman episode.
Yeah,
for those who haven't seen it.
Like there's so much stuff that I remember and don't remember. I didn't remember Mark Furman taking the fifth on whether or not he doctored the crime scene.
Right.
I knew he took the fifth on all the other stuff. I didn't know he took the fifth on that. Which kind of for like a brief moment I was like, wait, did OJ not do it?
I forgot that as the case went on, Chris Darden got crazier and crazier. He became more and more unhinged in court.
But like I'm pretty sure that part wasn't true though. The part where he walks out before Mark Furman.
May not have been, but the part where he like went off on Johnny Cochran was true, I think.
I think the part in the elevator was told to, but I love that part because like not for nothing, at some point someone had to tell Marcia Clark to go fuck herself because she just completely fucking botched the case.
Yeah.
But I know she was going through a divorce and she had.
Yeah, but if the entire case could have been tried, and maybe this could be her final – what it should have been her final summation with empty tequila shot glasses. Like it wasn't that bar where she was with Darden. Yeah. Like she totally spelled out how OJ did it and it made a lot of sense.
Like not for nothing. Like I'm like that too. Sometimes I got a couple of drinks in me and stuff flows out a little bit
better. God. If I don't get a beer in me before bar trivia, like forget about it. I couldn't even tell you my name. But you get one beer in me, all of a sudden I become like Stephen Hawking over here.
I also don't get – like even if they didn't call Mark Furman, wouldn't the defense have like – thought that suspicious and figured it out. But, like, whatever. It was just, he fucking did it.
No, but that's the thing. Like, you know, the most amazing thing about that trial, you think about, like, the odds of these things happening. And maybe the odds are quite high because it is the LAPD. But, like, one of the guys who is at the crime scene happens also to be
the biggest racist in the history of racism.
Right. Right. Like what? Like what if in Making a Murderer, one of the people that went to Steve Avery's house was a guy literally wearing a "I hate Steve Avery" T-shirt, and the thing he hates most in life is auto salvage places. Like
I haven't seen this yet.
It's great.
I know the Steve Avery, but like okay, so he takes the fifth on doctoring the crime scene. I feel like maybe OJ didn't do it because. Because, like, all right, like, at that point, like, I know I don't know how it went really in court, but at that point where Johnny Cochran's like, oh, wait, one more question.
Right.
Like, if Mark Furman was like, oh, no, that blood was already there. Like, that would he'd at least be like, yeah, I did say all that stuff to that woman in North Carolina. But, no, he totally did it. But the fact that he says that, doesn't that mean – so that means that he's not willing to say that
– play the reindeer games.
But – so then – what did he do? Did he find the bodies and then, like, scoop up some blood and sprinkle it around?
Yep.
Like, he just drove to OJ's house?
That's the thing. That was the thing. And then he sprinkled it around OJ's bedroom.
His bedroom, his front
found
porch.
His shoes, his Bruno Mali shoes.
If they were, like, in episode 10, which maybe they'll do it. They can fictionalize stuff. They, like, do a flashback and, like, O.J. Simpson becomes a starting running back at USC, and then, like, Mark Furman gets put to the bench, and he's like, I'll get you one day.
He's sitting there in his UCLA starter jacket.
I'm going to transfer because of this guy. Yeah. I'm going to get him at some point.
It's such a great show. And
so good.
I also love now these hilarious asides that are happening where clearly there are people part of O.J.'s defense team that are convinced he did it.
Yeah.
And then, like, every time they say something, Johnny Cochran shoots them, like, eye lasers.
Yeah.
And, like, Barry Sheck last night, just, like, Cochran's like, and once we get this, obviously, oh, man will walk free. And Baryshek's like, wait, walk free?
Hold on.
Yeah, like, hold on for what, Baryshek?
I also remember F. Lee Bailey being that funny or charming whenever he was in court. Like, Nathan Lane's a little too good. You know what I mean? Like, he's too likable to be F. Lee Bailey. Really, F. Lee Bailey being kind of a dick.
Oh, it's going to be – in the season finale, I saw a preview for it. There's a scene where F. Lee Bailey dresses like an elderly woman and charms the pants off of Gene Hackman.
Birdcage.
It took you a second.
I thought you were going to Mrs. Doubtfire.
Your synapses have not been firing as hard as well as they usually do today. I have to admit that.
I spent 5 minutes ripping your favorite movie. And you stared at me as if I
Yeah, that's true. I have to admit that.
Well, that's what happens when you have a day as long as ours. Yeah, and you'll find out why our day was so long.
That's what happens when bodies start slapping from doing the wild thing. That's right. Tone Loke for that ass.
Oh, I thought we were talking about what never mind.
No.
No.
No. It's our pilot. Anyways.
You ever do a pilot?
We love you all, and we can't wait to talk to you again. And thanks for listening to this elongated podcast that Lozo didn't want to do. But I made him stay late because I had to do video work, and I said, we should really talk about the emails. Yeah. And now it's like dinner time.
It's currently 5:20. It's 5:20. I have ingested a large coffee, 2 sugar cookies, an apple, and a tiny little brownie square today.
I took Lozo up to the Yahoo commissary before we did the show.
And he was like, dude, there's awesome food up there. You have to
Yeah, and there was about 2 hours earlier when lunch ended. So he hauled the sugar cookie in. I thought he was going to dive into the old salad bins and see if he can lick up some arugula.
But I was going to go in the back and be like, excuse me, sir, before you wash that dish, can I lick it? Is that gravy on there?
Before you kick it. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. And we'll talk to you next week somewhere else. Love you. Bye.
See ya.
Oh, wait. You got to keep talking because I got to shut off the show.
I mean, we could just cut it short before you sit back down. But, all right. Blah, blah. Duncan Keith should get 10 games. Yada, yada, yada.
All right.
See ya.